In this episode, I talk to Mr. Grant Morgan from R0. He's going to talk to us about how using UVC light in common workspaces can improve the way we sanitize those areas. He breaks it all down for us in this episode.
A few years ago, when I was looking for a safety podcast to add to my daily listening, I came across Blaine Hoffman, the Safety Pro. It's one of those podcasts that you can use with actionable advice. His attention to detail and understanding of the regulations that are out there are really helpful. If you're looking for a safety podcast, this is the one for you. And not only to mention, he's a great human being.
All right, Justin Obian, thank you so much for that intro. And not just a podcast listener, Justin has become a good friend over the last year or so. We've been, you know, conversing back and forth. It started with the podcast. That's what I love about this medium, this podcast. I've gotten to know in so many cool people. And Justin, thank you so much for your service. He's in the Navy currently, and he's working on his transition plan. What is it, 5, 6 years? I'm going to totally get it wrong, but it's been a long time in the Navy. He's working on his transition plan to the private sector, and he will be joining the private sector, continuing as a safety professional. We are so lucky to have him in our ranks among the best safety pros I know. So thanks once again for that incredible intro. Remember, if you want to intro the Safety Pro podcast, just check the LinkedIn page for the Safety Pro podcast for instructions on how to do that. Send me your intro and we will use it to intro an episode. So you never know who's going to be on here. Thanks again, Justin, for that. Getting into today's episode, Grant Morgan with R0. You know, I'm not even going to belabor this anymore because the interview speaks for itself. I can't believe I was able to sit down and talk to him about this topic on the podcast. But hey, if you're a premium podcast community member, then you will get to see the full-length video of this interview over at the Safety Pro Podcast Community. The link will be in the show notes. And before we launch into the interview, I have to make sure that I mention our partners in safety. Mighty Line Floor Tape, these folks have been supporting the podcast for many years. I can't thank them enough. And there's a reason why. This is why I don't call them sponsors at all. They're partners in safety, okay? And if you're looking to mark your facilities, I don't care if it's a warehouse, manufacturing site, if it's a supermarket, a grocery store, a corner market, if you have to mark your floors for lanes of travel, for distancing, where to stand, it doesn't matter, especially with the COVID stuff still going on, right? You've got to have labels on the floors. They have everything you need. So go to mightylinetape.com/podcast. Just for being a podcast listener, you can order a free sample of their incredible floor tape. Go ahead and do that. Go to mightylinetape.com/podcast. Order your sample for being a podcast listener. Let them know that we sent you and thank them for supporting the Safety Pro podcast. All right, let's get into the interview with Mr. Grant Morgan. Grant, you are the CEO and co-founder of R0. And I know we're going to get into all the fun stuff you do, but just tell us a little bit about your background. What is R0 and what are you into these days?
Absolutely. So my name is Grant Morgan. I'm one of the three co-founders and the current CEO of R0 Systems. And, you know, I'm a mechanical engineer by training and by nature, I guess. And, you know, started my career in medical devices and pharmaceutical manufacturing for big companies like Abbott and then a few smaller companies as well, where I got to stand up and lead a neurovascular value stream where we got to, you know, make permanent surgical implantables for neurovascular applications. And so kind of cut my teeth and started my career in medical devices. And shortly after made the leap to the digital world. And I was on the founding team of a company called iCracked, where we're basically like the Uber for smart device repair. And so, you know, had a network of about 15,000 technicians all over the United States, Canada, and Europe. And when you broke something, you'd press a button, we'd send someone out to you to fix it wherever you're at and be on our way. So I led the product and engineering teams there, grew the company. We were acquired by Allstate a couple of years ago, Spent a couple months getting the ship to port, left, started another company, and fast forward to about March, April of last year when the pandemic really hit, and got in touch with my two co-founders who I'd known from previous ventures, and we felt really compelled to jump in and figure out what we can do to help, and out of that was born R0. And R0 is fundamentally, we are a biosafety company. So we exist to help our customers create safer spaces for their employees, patrons, guests, and reduce the spread of infectious disease in commercial spaces. And so effectively what we're doing is we're taking hospital grade technologies and we're democratizing the access to them by adapting them for these commercial spaces where they're historically not necessarily used all the time. But the end goal with what we're doing is to create these safer spaces, not only help people be safer in the spaces where we spend so much of our time, but actually feel safer as well. So that's kind of what we are and who we do.
You've been busy. So
yeah.
I did some time in med device as well, spine implant manufacturers, and doing safety there. So it's interesting. I mean, the culture is a lot different there. When we talk about manufacturing in general, I mean, we have this image of, you know, manufacturing, and, you know, it varies from product to product. And that has the whole med device manufacturing industry. You know, there's this culture, you know, everything you're making is going to go in somebody's body. I mean, you know, I did aviation manufacturing as well. Same thing. They were hardworking welders and fabricators, and they were just skilled crafts folk. And they understood this is going to be flying somebody's family across the world, you know, and so manufacturing is, and skilled trades in general, it's serious business. And
it is. There are literally lives at stake. And, you know, I think that's one of the things that allowed us to move so quickly as well, is that, you know, there's nothing more motivating than knowing that, you know, there's an opportunity cost to every single day.
Yeah. Yeah. And so to your point, you know, focusing, taking something that is historically, okay, so you said, you know, cleaner, safer spaces. What are we talking about here? We're talking about UV technology, right?
Yeah. So our first product is UV technology. It's very similar to, it is the same, in fact, as what's been sort of the gold standard in hospitals for a number of years. But, you know, the platform that we're building and the observation we had when we started this company was, you know, look, we haven't done a particularly great job at preventing the spread of infectious disease in commercial spaces. And the evidence of that is that, you know, 40 million Americans get the flu every year, and somehow we've just accepted that that's normal. You know, MRSA or staph kills more people annually than Parkinson's, AIDS, and murder combined. Most people don't know these things.
Really? MRSA?
Yeah, MRSA. Yeah. And then that's not to mention E. coli, norovirus, all these other pathogens that are endemic to our customer spaces. And so, you know, coronavirus was the catalyst for this business, but we realized that there's a huge opportunity to do disinfection and infection prevention in these commercial spaces much better, more efficiently, more effectively than we've ever done it before. And we can do it without chemicals. And wow, that's where the UVC light comes in.
Yeah. And that's where I was, exactly where I was headed with that. So it was great that you got to talk about that and introduce this topic to the listeners. That, you know, going back to that, you know, this culture around manufacturing and how important, how critical manufacturing is to not just, you know, GDP and just, you know, the economy, but to people's lives. You know, when you think about med device manufacturing getting shut down because of something like this, you know, people who have surgeries that will improve their lives, save their lives, you know, are impacted. The supply chain, you know, aviation, we know what happened with the aviation travel industry. Just mm-hmm. I know folks that were just out of work because the aviation industry was shut down. So being able to make it safer during these types of times, if that's anything we've learned out of this, is, okay, how can we become more resilient to these types of disruptions so that we don't have to shut down wholesale entire industries. So taking something that has been used historically in one area and you say democratizing it, you know, talk a little bit about what, and it's not like you all woke up one day and said, hey, we could we could sell a UV light to these guys over here and they can use it in their lobby or in their manufacturing plant. There's a lot to it, right? So yeah. I mean, don't have to, you know, peel back the curtain all the way, but like, what do you mean by democratizing it so that we can bring it to other industries?
It's a great question. And I laugh because the way that you kind of described it, where, you know, we didn't just wake up one day, that's actually kind of how it did happen, but it's not how it typically happens. So what ended up happening was, you know, and it's funny you touch on the aviation industry and some of the historical events there. We actually studied a number of historical events, and 9/11 was actually one of them that we looked at. And you know, out of 9/11 came basically the entire homeland security apparatus for the United States. So we hired 14,000 TSA agents. You still have to take off your shoes, and you can't take liquids through airport security. You know, we founded the Department of Homeland Security, and all of these giant societal and infrastructural changes came out of that terrible, tragic event. And, you know, the thesis was that coronavirus at the time that we were thinking about starting this business was orders of magnitude more impactful and on a truly global scale, not just from a loss of lives perspective, but also from an economic devastation standpoint. And so we wanted to do something to really alleviate both of those things. So, you know, physically create safer spaces and then also hopefully accelerate the economic recovery long term. So what we ended up doing was we got in contact with a gentleman who is now our chief scientist, Dr. Richard Wade, who was the head of Cal OSHA for over a decade. He's taught at Harvard, Oxford. He's an infection prevention specialist and an occupational health specialist. And so Dr. Wade kind of led us on this journey of studying what hospitals do to prevent infections. And if you think about what a hospital is fundamentally, it's kind of a communal gathering place for the sick. And as long as hospitals have existed, they have the highest risk environments and the biggest challenge to keep the patients safe from each other and keep the frontline workers, doctors, surgeons, administrators, all safe from the patients. And so we started studying what do hospitals do, and particularly the best in breed hospitals. And you know, fundamentally, they do three things. They A, deal with the hands. So they scrub in, scrub out before and after surgery. They practice good hand hygiene. The second thing they do is they do manual disinfection with specially trained environmental services staff and special chemicals as well. But you know, as we know, all humans are imperfect. And studies actually showed that about 50% of surfaces in a hospital room upon terminal patient terminal room cleaning, 50% of those surfaces are actually missed. And so what the third thing was that we discovered for the first time along this journey was that the best hospitals in the world that do the best job at preventing infections use UVC light. And UVC light is not new technology. It's been around for over 100 years. In fact, the 1903 Nobel Prize for Medicine was awarded to Niels Finsen for the use of UVC to treat lupus. And it's been used in wastewater treatment applications since the 1910s. It's been used in air and surface disinfection since the 30s and 40s. And more recently, for decades, it's been used in hospitals. And so the body of evidence proving the germicidal efficacy of UVC is huge. The problem is that it hadn't proliferated outside the hospital into commercial spaces. And so, you know, we asked ourselves why, and we started digging in and realized that the products sold into hospitals are typically anywhere from $60,000 to $125,000 a piece. And, you know, being an engineer myself, I looked at these things. I'm like, these are light bulbs on wheels with a timer. There's no way they can be that expensive. And so what we discovered was it's really just an artifact. The pricing is an artifact of the healthcare system and the current state of it. And so essentially what happened is back in 2010, when the Affordable Care Act went into place, a few things changed. So, you know, they had to increase taxes to pay for the expanded coverage and reduce costs to pay for the expanded coverage. And prior to 2010, Medicare and Medicaid were reimbursing hospitals for hospital-acquired infections. Their HAIs is what they're called. Yeah. And that's a $35 to $40 billion a year economic burden on the hospital system. And what happened with the Affordable Care Act is the Medicare and Medicaid came back to the hospitals and said, hey, look, this happened on your watch. And you're going to bear the responsibility and the consequences for these HAIs happening in your space. And that's when the market for these sort of portable UVC whole room disinfection devices really took off within hospitals. And they were able to garner such a high price because these companies will walk in and they'll say, hey, look, if you prevent two or three HAIs, then this device pays for itself. Inevitably it works. And the hospital's happy because they're, you know, reducing their overall costs by investing in this equipment. But what we wanted to do, and this is where the democratization part comes in, but what we wanted to do was build something that has the same or higher efficacy as anything that's sold into a hospital, but we wanted to price it based on what it costs to manufacture, not how much value we can extract from the institutions and organizations that we're selling to. And so we did that. So we designed, developed, and manufactured from scratch our own whole room hospital grade UVC disinfection device in under 5 months. And what we did, a couple of unique things that we did, but one of the unique things was the business model. And so instead of offering the device for purchase for $125,000 or whatever, we came out to market with a hardware as a service model. And so we recognized that a lot of the organizations that we serve are economically distressed, and we wanted to be sensitive to that. And so we broke it out into essentially monthly payments, and you can think of it as a lease. And it comes out to about $17 a day, which is affordable to just about any type of organization. And so, you know, that's tying this thing full circle, taking this technology that is traditionally used in hospitals and that we know works, and adapting it for commercial spaces, but offering it at a price point that is, amenable to the types of customers who haven't had access to this before. That's what we mean by sort of democratizing access to hospital grade disinfection.
Nice. Yeah. And I mean, you're right. And you're speaking our language, like my listeners, you know, safety professionals, workplace safety professionals. When you mentioned Cal OSHA, I mean, you know, I know exactly who you're talking about. The, you know, we deal with this all the time, right? The ROI of, you know, how do you sell prevention methods, measures to the C-suite, for injuries and accidents that haven't happened yet. Right.
Yep.
So, this is what we do. We're in the prevention business. So I totally picked up what you were laying down on how easy it was for somebody to walk in because they experience it in real time. It's a hospital. They know, right? It's almost like, it's like when an attorney, you know, selling insurance for malpractice, right? It's like that sells itself. So
exactly.
So yeah, great. So give me an idea of how this might work. I know some folks that I've been talking to leading up to this episode are there are some safety concerns. Does it work? And, you know, all that good mm-hmm. stuff. Well, we know it works. But like how could you practically deploy something like this in various commercial spaces, like common spaces you would think of?
Absolutely. And if you caught me last week, I would have a device behind me. But unfortunately, I just moved. So for the listeners and the viewers, apologies for the, you know, stark white
new space. Office, right?
Yeah, the new office. But I don't know if you can see any of the boxes. But to kind of paint the picture of how this works, imagine basically a 6.5 foot tall cylindrical device that has eight UVC bulbs, high output UVC bulbs. Think of them like fluorescent light bulbs, essentially. And it's on wheels. And you wheel it into a room, you plug it into the wall, you set a timer and you hit go. And then you have about 30 seconds to leave the room. And once you leave the room, then it runs for whatever the cycle time is. It's between 3 and 7 minutes, depending on the size of the room. And when that cycle's over, you come back in and everything is disinfected. And so the speaking to the safety piece, you know, that was something that was super important to us. One of the reasons why we believe that UVC has not made it into the sort of mainstream, is because of the lack of regulation. And, you know, I came from a highly regulated industry in medical devices, and that was one of the reasons I ultimately left. But in this case, I think regulation, some minimal regulation is really good for the consumer. And so what I mean by that is there are no uniform performance standards for consumers to be able to compare devices, apples to apples. B, there are no safety regulations or standards that say, hey, look, this is potentially harmful wavelength of light. You need to take appropriate precautions to make sure that there aren't any exposures. So we see these companies that are selling products to schools even that don't have any safety mechanisms built in. And that's a problem. And then, you know, the other thing is that there are no regulations requiring companies to back their efficacy claims with actual data and testing. We think that, you know, in the same way that like a Lysol spray or a Clorox spray or bleach, any sort of household cleaner that says 99% disinfection or whatever, that has to be backed by data, by law. UVC is not the same way right now, but we believe it should be. And that's why we sent our device to a third-party lab to be tested to ASTM standards against four different challenge species, human coronavirus, MRSA, which is staph, feline calicivirus, which is the norovirus family, and then also E. coli. Yeah. And so against all four of those challenge species, we proved over a 99.99% reduction in those pathogens. But getting back to the device itself, the safety mechanisms that we have built into it are, you know, redundant. So first of all, we have PIR sensors at the top of the device. And so 6.5 feet tall, they have a great field of view, they're long range and highly sensitive. And so essentially, if anybody walks into the room while a cycle's in progress, the device will automatically shut itself off. Similarly, when I mentioned there's a 30-second countdown at the beginning of each cycle, if someone's still in the room when that countdown finishes, the device won't turn on. But one of the things I didn't mention that is unique to our device, and sort of our point of view, on, you know, what this industry should look like is we actually baked in LTE and Bluetooth into the device. And so it generates and emits data in real time as it's used. So we can tell you when it was used, how long it was run for, where it was used. And that data is collected automatically, so the user doesn't have to do anything. It's sent to our cloud offering, where we can then report on it in a dashboard. And what your audience might appreciate is we originally designed it for compliance. And so, you know, oftentimes, especially larger organizations that maintain multiple sites, they don't have full visibility into what's happening. So you don't know if your janitorial staff even came at night, you know, unless your trash bag's new in the morning. But right. But you also don't know how good of a job they did. You know, they might sign their name on a piece of paper and a clipboard, but you don't have that sort of execution compliance. And so with our device, we actually have this sort of auditable trail of disinfection activities that are happening within a space. And we can prove with data that something happened at a certain time. So compliance is big. Risk mitigation, you can imagine the implications on risk mitigation for a company being able to say, look, we did everything that we could and we can prove it with data to keep people safe. But what we're finding, and it's really interesting, is that a lot of our customers are actually taking that data and sharing it externally with their stakeholders, so their employees, their patrons, their guests, or whatever. But they're doing that to reestablish trust that they are doing something differentiated to keep them safe and hopefully, you know, accelerate the economic recovery for these businesses. So that's been a really interesting use case that we're really starting to enable and double down on.
That's interesting. That's pretty cool. So Bluetooth and LTE built in. It's got the sensor. So you start the 30-second time countdown. If you aren't out of the area in time, you got to start it all over again. You got to start the whole process all over again. It's not going to engage, right? Because it senses somebody in the area.
Yeah. Nice. And if it's actually interrupted mid-cycle, it'll actually pause the cycle. And so when you come back in, you have to play again, hit go, and it'll resume where it left off. But you know, if somebody walks in, you actually get to see that in your dashboard. So you can see an event that lets you know that there was a possible exposure, an intrusion alert is what we call it. And so, that's another added benefit to collecting that data.
I tell people, going back to MRSA, I tell people all the time, I worked when I was doing consulting, I had a manufacturing client and they had an on-site medical clinic, and the physician there, he was telling me like, 90% of the infections from small lacerations that were just first aids, they're going to turn into an OSHA recordable injury because they're going to get infected. And I can tell you right now, there's MRSA all over this place. I'm like, yeah. Clean the place. What? And he was like, it's an old manufacturing site. It's huge. How are we going to clean everything? And this was years ago. And I feel like calling him now and
tell him, hey, I know how
you can clean it. Yeah, I know a guy. So that's great. So some of the questions, I wrote down some questions from colleagues when I was asking about just in general UV light for sanitation, for cleaning. What about and you mentioned like the data logging and for compliance, for quality assurance. What about like the life of the bulbs? Is there a way to monitor that? And, talk a little bit about the bulb itself. I'm using bulb because I don't know if that's what you're using.
Yeah, but, no, that's okay. Exactly what it is. And fundamentally, it is a fluorescent light bulb, similar to what goes in your ceiling, a little bit different, but you can think of it the same way for all intents and purposes. But the life of the bulbs that we use, they're very long life. So they're about 16,000 hours is what they're rated for. Now, in practice, what happens is when you cycle the bulbs, what you're doing is you're actually hitting the filaments in the bulbs with a really, really high voltage and running a lot of power through them. And so it degrades them, and their useful life is actually less than 16,000 hours. And so we have done a ton of testing to draw sort of this degradation curve. So we know, when we're at about 90% of the maximum output of the life of the bulbs. And the beauty of our hardware as a service model is we'll automatically ship you new bulbs when you need them. And then we'll recycle your old bulbs for you as well. And so we make it super easy on the user. They don't have to track anything. They can see like kind of like an odometer, how much life is on those bulbs in their dashboard, but they don't have to think about or do anything other than just popping the bulbs out of the sockets and replacing them with new ones and dropping the old ones into a box to recycle. But it's super easy.
Nice. That was a question that I had, and I'm like, I don't know. I'll ask Grant and about that one. So that's, you made it really easy to monitor that and to get those changed out. So mm-hmm. You mentioned schools, you mentioned education. What about like, what are some other common spaces that are starting to use these now? Like, so let's start with public places.
Yeah. So public places, in public places. So we're working with some transit authorities. So think about like, bus stops, and the, a lot of them, any indoor space there, the bathrooms, they have like snack bars, whatever. Concessions, places like that. So transit authorities, we're working a lot with professional sports teams in stadiums. So think like press boxes, concessions, bathrooms, the locker rooms, the training rooms, things like that. That's a huge use case for us. The corporate office space is starting to pick up now that things are starting to reopen a little bit. And what we're finding is that employees are starting to hold their employers accountable. They're having this realization about how vulnerable we really are and how much work is a petri dish. Like humans, we're indoor species. We spend 90% of our lives indoors, and a third of that is spent at work. And so, the implications of that are your facilities manager or the person who makes the decisions about the health and the safety of your building, that person has a greater impact on your overall health and well-being than your doctor does. And so the responsibilities and roles of these people are shifting and expanding very, very quickly, as I'm sure some of your listeners can appreciate. And it's a tall task, but there's a lot out there to consider. But the responsibility and even the obligation is huge. But we're working with a ton of different corporate office reopenings right now to do conference rooms, bathrooms, open office spaces, cafeterias, things like that. And then a little bit of everything. We're in jails and prisons too. But blessing and the curse of this business is it's perfectly horizontal. Everyone needs health and safety.
It it's what I call it, the universal truth. It's, you know, to be safe and secure, whether at home or at work or in life, you know, that's a basic human desire, right? I mean, you can go with Maslow's hierarchy of needs if you want, you know, after breathing and eating, you know, staying, you know, sustenance, it's safety and security. And so you're touching on, you're tapping into, this is our world, right? This is what we do. Exactly. We help people stay safe. So another question was, in a room with, you mentioned like a gym, like the sports setting in a gym, a workout room, lots of hard surfaces. If the light can touch it, it can sanitize it. Or is there a range, or is there like, what's...
Yeah. So the intensity, so basically what we want to measure and what we are optimizing for is called the dose. And all the doses is just the intensity times the time of exposure. And so it's the UVC light works with the same principles as light from the sun. So, sunburns are a good example. If you get a really high dose, so you're in a, you know, hot place that's close to the equator, for example, closer to the sun, and you're exposed for a long time, you're going to get a worse sunburn than if you're further from the sun and not exposed for very long. So same principle applies to the light that we use to disinfect. And so the bigger the room, the longer the cycle time that's required to achieve the same level of disinfection. And so one of the things we do with our customers, with every customer, is we actually handhold them through the onboarding process, teach everyone on their team how to use it safely and effectively. We teach them where to put it and how long to run it for. And it's dirt simple. There are only four buttons on the device. There's on and off, start and stop, and then there's up and down. And so it's dirt simple to run, no matter who you are. But
well,
we help you understand, where to put it and how long to run it for.
Nice. So where can folks go to learn more about this technology? And this is just one product that you have, right? Okay.
Yep.
And do you have something similar or in a different space?
So what we're building, and I mentioned a little bit earlier, but you know, our observation about this space is that, you know, there's a huge, huge opportunity to create safer spaces. And, you know, pathogens have evolved, but the tools and technologies we use to fight them have not. We're still using bleach. You can go look up, bleach commercials from, you know, the 1800s that are selling, you know, these chemical manufacturers are making the same exact product, and it's archaic. And we think that, we kind of took a step back and said, what should this space look like in 2020 and beyond? And to us, that's a lot more IoT connected hardware, a lot more data and data science to derive some actionable insights, a lot more software to automate workflows, to feed those insights back to our customers and influence behaviors in advantageous ways. And what that manifests itself into is this platform where we have hardware devices that are deployed into our customers' spaces that attack and mitigate risk across all of the different vectors of transmission for these different viruses and pathogens, really. It's air, surface, and person to person. And so, you know, we've got a touchless hand sanitizer dispenser with an integrated thermal sensor on the side coming out soon, where the premise of the device is essentially stop pathogens at the door. So, you know, you take a temperature screening from your wrist from our device instead of, you know, today's state of the art is someone walks up to you with something shaped like a gun and points it at your forehead. Not a great customer experience.
It's a great look too. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. But we take the temperature reading from your wrist. And if you have an elevated temperature and you're shedding a virus ostensibly, you can be prohibited from coming into the space and getting other people sick. Now, if you're not sick, but you touched an ATM or a gas pump or picked something up on your hands, you can get it off of your hands and kill whatever's on there with the hand sanitizer. That device generates data about its usage and emits it to our cloud. We have an air product coming out that is an upper room UVGI device. And so essentially it works by creating a beam of ultraviolet light across the top of a room in an area where humans don't go. And it works with natural convective currents. So when you breathe out the air that is ostensibly contaminated, if you're sick, is hot and it gets carried up into this beam of light, gets disinfected. And then by the time it cools, it's safe and dropped back down to where humans are. And though this product is a phenomenal augmentation to existing HVAC units. So instead of a school, for example, spending $7 million to retrofit their central HVAC system for a couple thousand bucks, you can install one of these things on your wall and add 6 to 12 air changes per hour, the equivalent of 6 to 12 wow. air changes per hour.
So that's so like a light filter. Like instead of it going through a HEPA filter, trying to pull air through a physical media, right, that will capture pathogens, this is going to kill it in the air.
Yep, you nailed it. And the way we talk about it is kill, not capture. So you absolutely nailed it. But all of these devices are going to be IoT enabled and connected. They feed data back to our platform. And what we're going to be able to do with all of these devices deployed into our customer spaces is paint this holistic picture of the health and safety and the risk associated with those spaces. And so we'll have devices that can help understand the flow of traffic, where people congregate, and therefore where the risk is. And then we can automate the workflows and turn on the devices nearby to mitigate that risk in real time without any human intervention. So that's what sort of the picture that we're painting of the future that we see in sort of taking this holistic approach to biosafety within these spaces.
Yeah, I definitely see this growing because, you know, I'm seeing all kinds of crazy stuff like supermarkets are doing or even just, you know, warehouses and other manufacturing sites having to deal with just how do we get to the point where people can just start coming back to work, right? Now, forget, they haven't even thought about like, how do we manage when they're here? How can we just open up? And yep. They usually do this. They cycle them, right? We'll have people come in, we'll watch them and make sure they're staying away from each other and wearing masks and whatnot. And then we got to kick them all out when they leave. And then we physically have to go and make it clean again. And then go in, it sounds like some of the things you were talking about can actually touch every step of that process of as they're coming in, when they're in. And then of course, when, you know, taking advantage of downtime at night, you know, with the UV light and stuff. So that's great. It's a great way to think about this holistically from an end-to-end type of process, not just one moment in time in a business's life, which is at night or, you know, the janitorial staff comes in and everybody's gone, right?
Exactly.
Which is very important. You still have that, but mm-hmm. I love the vision of looking at this holistically. It's good stuff.
Yeah, and I think to your point, it's you need it all, right? Like it takes a layered approach, and we're not displacing jobs here where, you know, the janitorial staff doesn't come in at night. That's still necessary. But, you know, I mentioned earlier, there's this expanded scope of responsibility. Now you have facilities managers that are expected to be epidemiologists. And so
right.
The way we see ourselves fitting in is we are tools and technologies to make them more efficient, take some stuff off their plate so they can focus on, you know, getting up to speed and succeeding at this expanded scope of responsibilities. And then also look good to their superiors and make them the hero. So, you know, we can do this more efficiently and effectively than it's ever been done before. We can cut labor costs. We can displace chemicals and reduce your chemical consumption costs and the like. But, you know, ultimately, you know, we hope that results in sort of an acceleration back to, you know, getting people in these spaces. And we're actually seeing that with some of the businesses that we're working with, either, you know, a bump in business after implementing and articulating that they are using our Zero products or the like.
Yeah. You're speaking our language. Are you sure you're not a safety professional?
Trying.
We all are technically, but, a layered approach, you know, we use the Swiss cheese model. We talk about we've been talking about that for years. And of course, the pandemic has introduced, I know you hear all kinds of politicians or whatever talking about Swiss cheese now, and now it's become commonplace. I mean, safety, my colleagues and I, we kind of chuckle because it's been a struggle for our entire professional careers that, you know, of trying to sell workers on the benefits of PPE. And now we have people running around that couldn't spell PPE before or as experts on masks work, masks don't work. And it's like, oh my goodness. So, you know, obviously the big benefit here is you touched on earlier is trust, is confidence, is like, look, are you doing something? And I've seen firsthand, and I know I've talked to other colleagues that have been tracking these things, a spike in like contact dermatitis, skin reactions, because companies, they don't have a choice. They're like, they bring in this army of, I envision that movie Monsters, Inc., where they put the tent over you and shave the monster when you've come in contact with a human. But they come in and they have to shut the place down. They come in their suits and they fog the place.
Yep.
And it leaves a sticky residue everywhere, and some surfaces can't be fogged, so they have to wipe them. And then you introduce that, you know, you probably miss some areas. But we've had an increase in just allergic reactions to chemicals.
Yep.
And
yep.
So this is, you're speaking our language when you talk about like substitution as an engineering control, as a on the hierarchy of controls to reduce hazards. Substitution, you know, we still got to clean it, but how you clean it is what you're addressing. And
exactly.
That's great. That's good
stuff. And I think you nailed it. And one of the things that we think is going to happen in the world is I think that you'll see a decrease in the use of chemicals. And you touched on it a little bit, but you know, one of the you know, objective facts about chemicals is chemical exposure, and especially occupational exposure, is strongly correlated to massive increases in different respiratory diseases like asthma or COPD, which happens to be one of the top, you know, killers in the United States. And so, you know, the hard part is it takes a long time to develop these sort of chronic symptoms and chronic issues. And so I think the chemical companies have been able to sort of dodge the responsibility for some period of time because it's hard to make that direct link. But the science is clear, and intuitively, like, you, when you walk into a room that was just cleaned with bleach, if that bleach is killing stuff on the surfaces, like, of course it's going to be harmful to your lungs, and you can smell it and feel it. And, you know, we've talked to customers who are, you know, housekeepers or janitorial custodial staff, whatnot. And we actually, I won't throw anybody under the bus, but one of the groups that we shadowed at a hotel was one of the women was saying that she actually dilutes her own bleach because at the end of a day, her lungs and her throat burn from the exposure to the concentration of bleach that she's required, you know, by her job to apply every day. And so
it
breaks my heart, and it compels us even more to proliferate this solution, just because there's a better way. These tools exist. Yes.
That's why I wanted to talk. I'm such a geek, number one, and I love learning about new things, but we're safety professionals, and you know, we're all about learning and growing, improving, innovating. And one of my mantras has always been, you know, the old school safety person. And I shared this on social media recently, an interview that Matt Damon did on Conan O'Brien, where he was joking about meeting Tom Cruise, and he wanted to ask Tom Cruise how he did that stunt in the one movie where he jumped off the building. And Tom Cruise tells a story of, okay, first thing you do is you go to the safety guy and you tell him what you want to do. And he's like, and the safety guy said, no. And then Matt Damon goes, okay, then what'd you do? And Tom Cruise says, I got another safety guy. And I share that all the time because, one, you get to name drop a couple of big actors, but two, is safety isn't about saying no. It's about innovating into work. It's innovating our way into what needs to happen. We need to keep these places clean, right? We're going to open up. How we open up is going to make the difference. And you're right. We can't just hose the place down. Oh, we can. Some people are still doing it. But that, you know, that introduces so many other issues that I think, and to your point, 2020 and beyond, 2021 now, we don't need to. And I'm glad that there are companies out there like yours that are taking a hard look at this, a serious look at this, and seeing how we can introduce this technology to more and more workplaces that probably wouldn't have thought about this stuff before.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. Well, I think it's interesting. Like my PR team's going to kill me for saying this, where we just did a survey. We haven't published the data yet. That's why they're going to kill me, but I'll tell you guys, but we just did a survey with Harris Poll, a very, you know, legitimate, reputable polling a group, but did an employee sentiment sort of poll to understand, like, how are they thinking about returning to work? And the data was clear. 92% of respondents said that they think that their employer is responsible for creating and maintaining a healthy workspace and is responsible for their overall health and their risk of infection there. 67% of people surveyed said if they didn't feel like their employer was doing making significant and lasting changes to their sort of infection control and operational protocols, 67% of people said they'd start looking for a new job. And so I think for the first time in certainly my life, the power is with the employees, and this obligation of employers to maintain a healthy workspace has always existed. But now I think you're going to see accountability come into place, and accountability in the form of choosing where to work. And so I think there's going to be a mass exodus of talent from companies that don't change, you know, what they were doing, don't adapt. And then conversely, I think it's going to become a huge competitive advantage to invest in healthy spaces for some of these companies. And the ones that do it well, the ROI is immeasurable. Not only are you going to have a better, better talent acquisition and retain a retention of top talent, but you're going to have more productive and engaged employees too. There's a ton of science out there that shows that the health of the workspace directly impacts cognitive function and capacity. And so, you know, we think that now is the time to start ushering in some of those things that we know work and start proving that, look, this is a worthwhile investment. It's always been a worthwhile investment, but now we have the unfortunate circumstance of being able to focus on this and say, like, look what can happen if we're not prepared.
Yeah. What do they say? Necessity is the mother of invention, right?
Yes, it is.
There it is. So, hey, great stuff. Where can our listeners and anybody watching this video go to learn more about your company?
Absolutely. R0.com. So R, and then you spell out the word zero, R-Z-E-R-O.com.
Perfect. I will have links to r0.com as well. And that way it'll be easy for them to just click in the show notes when they're listening and check out the website. Anybody that is looking to do what Grant was just talking about, up their game when it comes to providing a clean, sanitized work area and protect the safety and health of the most valuable asset any business has, which is our people. Go to r0.com to learn more. And if you have any comments, questions, you know, that you want to share with us about this technology, UV technology, go ahead and click on the link and jump in on the conversation over at the Safety Pro Podcast community page. That's where we are going to post the video of this interview for those of you who are only getting the audio. And click that link once again to join in on the conversation over at the community. Grant, I can't thank you enough for taking time out of your busy schedule. I know you got some unpacking to do and everything, and here you are talking to some safety guy about your stuff. But it's that passion and that dedication that we love, and I appreciate it.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me, Blaine. And one thing for your viewers, I just wanted to express my deep and sincere gratitude for what you guys do. You guys are the true heroes. You've been unsung for a long time, but now it's your time to shine. And so I have a tremendous amount of appreciation and gratitude for the work that all of you safety professionals do. So thanks for listening to us. Blaine, thank you for having me. I really appreciate the opportunity to come speak to your audience.
Anytime. We'll have to do it again soon as you get into some new products and technology to help us make our workplaces safer. So I appreciate it. Thanks.
Awesome. Thanks a lot.
All right, there you go. The interview with Grant Morgan. Remember, go to r0.com to learn more about the cool stuff they're working on. And if you picked up on it in the interview there, they're not just working on these UVC lights. They've got some other stuff they're working on that I'm really looking forward to seeing it deployed in workspaces soon. And I would love to hear your comments. By the way, the video, once again, the Safety Pro Podcast community site. If you're a premium member, you get to see the full length video of our interview. Also, make sure you drop by the community site to share your comments about this technology, about this topic in general. If you have experience using it, if you have any kind of interest in it, if you have something to say about this particular topic, head over to the Safety Pro Podcast community. Premium members, you get to interact with other members. You get to direct message me, and we get to engage in the live chats that are coming. You get to take part in all of the video courses that are available right now and that are coming up, where we are launching a whole new series on root cause analysis. So if you're a premium member, look forward to that. If you're not, think about joining the community of Safety Pros today, and I will talk to you on the next Safety Pro podcast episode.